We go. Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show starts now. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Fan Upstate. Welcome in. Great to have you. Rob Brown and the great one Lonzo with you on a lovely, lovely Friday morning. Friday morning.
I was saving it, but okay.
There's no quota on the Rebecca.
That was going to be my clip in between. Now I got to find something else because I don't want to be repetitive.
We can there it is. Good vibes only.
Because last time I did that,
Friday,
you seemed to be getting upset.
Get down on Friday.
And one thing I don't ever want to do is upset Rob Brown because that's not what I'm here for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
I'm done. Mm-hmm. I want to give him a verbal back rub.
Now, last time.
I meant shoulder thing. I don't know how to say the shoulder thing.
No, I mean, that is a back rub. Yeah. Just for...
Well, how would you call the shoulder thing? You know, where you got this champ, that kind of
no,
thing?
No, that's back rub for sure.
Isn't there another name for it? A shoulder? Yeah, I don't know.
I'm just saying I want to give him a verbal back rub is not a combination of words I'd think I was going
to
hear from the great
one. I was trying to find a way to be supportive.
I appreciate
sarcastically.
It. Well, that's obvious. We've got a lot to get to over the back 3 hours of the show. We do have to get some baseball in here. The Atlanta Braves on the road, 4-game set against the Philadelphia Phillies, a very important 4-game set. And game one was there for the taking for Atlanta last night, but unfortunately, Uncle Charlie Morton fell apart in the fifth inning, got yanked after 5.1, and then the reservist and closers for Atlanta gave up a couple, and the Phillies come back and steal game one after being down 4-0 against Atlanta. 5-4 win for the Phillies last night. The Atlanta Braves have to at least split this series if there is any hope remaining of winning the National League East. If they do not split this series, and frankly, I'm actually going to go one step further. I think the Braves have to win this series if they want any chance to win the AL East. They will have to win the next three in a row over the Phillies, and that is a tall, tall task. So we'll talk about the Atlanta Braves coming up here in just a little while from right now. Of course, tomorrow is college football day in America. So coming up later on in the show, we've got your Rob Brown Show viewer guide to week number one that includes the quad box. We're going to tell you the four games in the three windows of play that I suggest you keep an eye on if you want to be the most well-informed college football fan that you can possibly be. We're going to get into that coming up a little bit later on in this hour of the show. 9 a.m. this a.m. We'll be joined by John Epps of the Moving the Chains crew. It was supposed to be Kevin and John, but Kev went to Columbia for the Hootie and the Blowfish show last night. And I told Kev, why don't you just take the morning off? Because if it's...
Wait. Don't salespeople work on Fridays?
Not when they go to a Hootie and the Blowfish concert the night before.
It must be nice. Can we ask John to wear the hat this week?
I think John caught an earful from everybody, including his own boys, for not rocking the hat last week.
Because you and I both were like, who the heck is that?
And he came on the stream, and I'm like...
Yeah, it's like, who is that? Did they add somebody new? And with the background, it like made his, it didn't work. It was disturbing.
We'll see.
If you're listening, John, find a hat, dude.
John Epps will be here. Jarrell Hendricks may be here, but at least one representative of the Moving the Chains pod will be here at 9 a.m. this a.m. to talk high school football. We got that coming up for you. We'll get into some NFL. Brandon Ayuk has been re-signed. Why am I telling you what's happened? Why am I telling you that at 7:05 when you got to be to work in 54 minutes and 33 seconds and you're going to talk sports with your coworkers? And if you're going to talk sports, you tune in now to find out what's going on when we do this.
Are you ready for the playbook of the peculiar, the almanac of the absurd, and the encyclopedia of the
Water cooler cheat sheet, top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports on this Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. If you need to know what's going on before you do, that's why we're here, and you are, of course, welcome in advance. Let's dive headfirst in with item number one. Talked about this one a little bit already. Might as well put it to bed early. 5-4, the Phillies take the first of a four-game set over the Atlanta Braves last night. The Bravos entered the bottom of the sixth up 4-0 against Philly, who, of course, is leading the NL East as it stands right now. But the wheels came off at that point. Charlie Morton made it 5.2 innings, but got to two outs in the bottom of the fifth. And it was top of the sixth. And it was just bad after that. Five hits, did give up three runs. Cade Seven allowed one a dinger before he gave way to Aaron Bummer. Bummer would allow one hit and an earned run. He would give way to Grant Holmes, who had finished the back one inning and two outs. He gave up two hits, but did give up one more run. That was the deciding run between the Phillies and the Bravos last night. Atlanta collected seven scattered hits. Two of them were Matty Ice Baby Olsen home runs last night, including a 450-foot bomb last night over the batter's eye wall against the back of Citizens Bank. Unfortunately, there were dingers elsewhere, including one from Brandon Marsh, a three-run shot in the bottom of the sixth that gave the Phillies the lead, and they would never get it back. Atlanta could not muster anything in the away half of the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings, so they dropped game one of the four-game set. What does that mean? Well, it means that Philly has grown their lead in the National League Eastern Division back to a full six games. It means that the Atlanta Braves, as far as I am concerned, if they do not end this series within five games, there is no hope to win the division at that point. It will become a protect the wild card season, not a press to run down Philly season and earn yourself home field. Because while I have said a number of times that I do not think that teams are pressing for the one seed or the two seed and the first round by anymore, I do think they would press for home field advantage in the divisional series if it is available to them. If the Braves are going to capture the NL East again, they will need to end this series within five games of Philadelphia. That means that they will need to win two of the remaining three games in this series. If they really want a shot, they just need to sweep this thing and get it down to that three-game mark. The good news for the Bravos is that as it stands right now, they are a full three games up on the New York Mets. They did not lose any ground with the loss last night. Three games up on the Mets for the final wild card spot. They remain five up on Chicago, six up on St. Louis, six and a half on San Francisco, and nine on the Reds. Everybody else 10.5 games back or further. They are two games back at the Padres for wild card spot number two. The Padres on a two-game losing streak now, so they did give one back to Atlanta. The Diamondbacks got back on a losing streak as they dropped one last night, so they stay three games up of the Braves. That is where the divisional race and wild card races stand after the loss last night. The Bravos will get back in action tonight when they take on the Phillies in game number two of this series. First pitch is at 6:40 this evening. Let's go to item number two. Tennis, not a sport that gets a lot of love in the water cooler cheat sheet. It's not something we bring up very often. And even if they are playing majors like the U.S. Open, it still very, very rarely makes the top three sports stories you need to know. But it does here. Carlos Alcaraz, the number three ranked player on planet Earth, and the dude that coming into this was one of the hottest players on planet Earth, a guy who just won the French Open, a guy that's got a Wimbledon shield in the back pocket, a guy that won the silver medal in the Paris Olympics, and the only reason he didn't win gold is because he ran into the buzzsaw that was Novak Djokovic trying to get his first gold medal. And he did. But Alcaraz, of course, ended up winning the silver medal. Last night, Carlos Alcaraz got upset by the number 74 ranked player on planet Earth, Botic von der Zandschulp. I think I nailed it. I don't know for sure.
Should be a little more, a little more.
Botic von der Zandschulp.
There we go.
I think I nailed it, but I don't
more,
know. For
more
sure.
Like Lily von Stoop.
I'm tiled. Anyway. Straight set 6-1, 7-5, 6-4 to the 74th ranked player in the world. After the match, Alcaraz said that he just could not get his head right, said that he was not thinking. He was playing not just against van der Zandschulp, but against his own head, his own mentality as well. Alcaraz was the pre-tournament men's favorite. The odds last night, if you're into that, the other dude, the other guy, was like 200-1 to upset Carlos Alcaraz. That's a big upset. He has bounced from the men's side of the U.S. Open up in Flushing Meadows and is done with his time in this tournament. Shocking upset last night in the U.S. Open. Let us go to item number three. Ending what has been a months-long roller coaster ride for the biggest remaining wide receiver out there, not on the market in terms of being a free agent, but on the market as a team that a lot of people thought was going to be traded away. He will not. Brandon Ayuk will remain a San Francisco 49ers. The Niners and Ayuk agreeing to a four-year deal last night worth $120 million, 76 of it guaranteed. He will make 47 of that contract before April 1st of next year. Ayuk is now tied with Tyreek Hill as the fifth highest paid wide receiver in the NFL with an annual average value of $30 million per season. He is also now the second highest paid member of the San Francisco 49ers, just ahead of former South Carolina Gamecock Deebo Samuel and two spots behind the $34 million man, Nick Bosa. There were thoughts that he was going to end up in New England. He poo-pooed that trade. There were thoughts that he was going to end up in Pittsburgh. That trade never really materialized. The interesting thing about this is not that the extension got done. The interesting thing about this was that despite the fact that I thought Brandon Ayuk played his cards correctly, turns out it was actually the 49ers who played the cards correctly here. Why? Because this deal was the deal that the 49ers put on the table for Brandon Ayuk back in early August. They did not ever change the deal. They put it on the table on August. They said, we're going to leave this right, Sean. If you decide to sign it, it'll be sitting here waiting for you. And if you don't, that's okay. We'll get to football season. Remember, had Ayuk not suited up and played for San Francisco per the collective bargaining agreement, Brandon Ayuk would have started losing game checks. Those game checks dramatically steeper than the fines that Ayuk was accumulating by not practicing. So basically, he thought he was going to be able to strong arm the 49ers into giving him a deal. I assume that he wanted to become the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League, despite the fact that Brandon Ayuk is very good. He ain't the best wide receiver in the National Football League. He's in the top five, maybe top six. But he ain't number one. He ain't more valuable than Cheetah, for instance. Either way, Brandon Ayuk does ultimately agree to sign the deal that the 49ers put on the table about a half month ago, a little bit more than a half month ago, in order to stay in San Francisco and, you know, not miss game checks. Now what's interesting, Brandon Ayuk is not even suited up during this offseason. Brandon Ayuk has 9 days to get his life together. Actually, I think 10 days because I think if I recall correctly, they play the Monday night game in week one. Either way, my man's got about a week and a half to get himself on the page with a group full of guys in that offensive locker room that he's not really hung out with yet this offseason. I find that very interesting because the team won. The team won this. The team won this when I thought they wouldn't. A couple of other wide receivers this offseason, the player won. In this case, I think the team won it. They got the deal that they wanted done. They didn't fall for it. When trade partners began to materialize, they played the game the right way to get Brandon Ayuk to say no to going to those teams, which he did, as he had a trade decline option. And Brandon Ayuk going to stay on board with the 49ers. Why is this important? Because two things. Number one, all they got to do now is pay Brock Purdy, which, again, I don't think they're going to give him a big-time contract because I think there's about 14 to 16 quarterbacks in the National Football League that could show up in San Francisco and perform at least as well, if not outperform, Brock Purdy in that San Francisco offense. But number two, I think San Francisco remains one of the two favorites in the NFC with this move. If they lost Brandon Ayuk, I do not think Brock Purdy is good enough by himself to get this team to a Super Bowl. He is a good quarterback who has to be lifted by a great team, not a great quarterback who lifts a great team. Well, guess what, kids? They got the party back together. Everybody is back involved. McCaffrey, Kittle, Ayuk, Samuels. They're all back in the fold, so I think the San Francisco 49ers are right back to the top of the NFC odds-on list to win a Super Bowl this year. When we come back here in a minute, what do you say we talk some college football as we get set for week number one? We have spent some time talking about how important this game is for South Carolina to play Old Dominion. Let's talk about what we expect to see out of the matchup between South Carolina and Old Dominion. We'll do the same for Clemson and Georgia. To wrap up this hour, hour three, we talk about everybody else on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show continues. It is the Fan Upstate. Let's get to it, boys and girls. Let's talk a little college football, shall we? The Gamecocks of South Carolina set to welcome in the Old Dominion University Monarchs coming up tomorrow at Willie B. I'm going to start with just my expectation. Lonzo, this team's got to come out and win this game. I'm not talking about have more points than Old Dominion. I'm talking about they have got to take I'm going to say respectfully, plucky Old Dominion team. But an Old Dominion team that was not great last year. 11 of ODU's 13 games last year were decided by one score. Five of those were losses last year. They were 6-7. They were 5-3 in the Sun Belt last year. Last year important because they do have a number of starters coming back this year. They also have lost a number of spots. One of the spots they're bringing back as starter is quarterback Grant Wilson, who will be at the helm for this offense last year. But there's a big problem, and this is one that I am going to say South Carolina's got to take advantage of. They lost three offensive linemen. They're bringing back the left side of their line. Santana Saunders will be at left tackle. Stephon Dubose-Bourne will be at the left guard. However, Old Dominion had the worst offensive line in FBS football last season. They allowed 62 sacks. They averaged 4.8 sacks per game last season, and that's not all stacked up against Power 5 teams. This is an Old Dominion team that lost to Virginia Tech to open the year last year, 17-36. Virginia Tech pulled away late in that game from ODU. I'm going to need South Carolina to open up early in this game. I'm going to need South Carolina to get hot at the point of attack. I'm going to need South Carolina to come out firing across the front seven. I am going to need the defensive line of this team. Pick your player, eyes on Tonka Hemingway, for instance. I'm going to need them to bash Old Dominion at the point of attack. Offensively, I think what I want to see is every element of the offense involved. I I know you want to put it on display, and especially if you can get this game out of hand quickly. I know that you don't want to show too much since you start SEC play in week number two. But I've said a couple of times this offseason, if I am South Carolina this year, I am not really focusing on, oh, we got to come out and be the best SEC competitor we can be. I'm not really dialing in on, I want to go out there and show the SEC. No. I want to show that we're a better football team. I want to show we're a better football team. I want to show we're an improved football team. I want to show we're a football team that has evolved, that has grown, that has improved, that has gotten better. And if I got to break out everything to drive ODU into the dirt, that's what I got to do.
See, that's what I want to see, garbage time. I know it's a weird thing to say, but I want to see garbage time, because if garbage time exists, that means they dominated like they should over Old Dominion, and they're able to get some other guys in there.
I'd be fine with that. I'd be fine with that. Whatever it takes, and I'd even be fine to say it that way, Zoe. Whatever it takes to create garbage time, that's what I want to see. This is an ODU team that offensively was bad last year. I mean, bad last year. Defensively, kind of interesting. It was not a great defensive team last year. But there are some guys. Jason Henderson is going to be leading ODU from the linebacker position. I mean it when I say this. And I know that there are going to be some South Carolina fans that take this a certain kind of way. Please don't. It's not meant to be. Jason Henderson might be the best defensive player between both of these teams. The dude is a stud. Man ended the season last year. The 2023 season. With 170 tackles. 170 tackles. My dude was averaging like 14 tackles a game. He is fast. He is everywhere. He will attack the quarterback, but he's also got an elite ability to change direction. Jason Henderson is a top flight FBS caliber player. He is the caliber of player that could be playing on a good SEC team. You're going to have to keep an eye out for that guy. At defensive tackle, Denzel Lowry is a dude you want to keep an eye on. All Sun Belt honorable mention honors last season. Ended up with 3 sacks and 5 tackles for a loss. And in the, 45 minutes or so last night that I spent scrolling around and scouting ODU, this is a cat that I think is an impact player for Old Dominion this year. This is a cat I think is an impact player in this game for Old Dominion. This is the type of cat that I think can have a say on the offensive line. He's one of those guys, or at least the impression I've gotten from, again, a couple of hours of scouting this team over the last couple of days. This is one of those guys, Zoe, whose impact on a game can be massive, but you can't find it on a stat sheet, right? Like, he's not going to end the game with 8, 9, 10 tackles from the defensive line position, but a couple of the guys behind him are going to end with 8, 9 tackles on the stat sheet, because this guy eats up blocks and he demands extra attention, and it's going to free other guys up in the ODU front 7 to try to get back to Lenora Sellers, to try to get into the backfield and wreak havoc on the run game for South Carolina. These are the dudes you're going to have to focus on. There is good news for Lenora Sellers. Old Dominion does not return a single defensive back this year. Not one. They run a nickel. They're going to run. You're going to see some 3-4. You're going to see some 4-3, but you're going to see a lot of 3-3-5, a lot of 5-2. Math is hard. A lot of 5-7. You're going to see a lot of 5 defensive back sets. They will run a nickel back set at you. But they do not have anybody who is a returning starter from last year. They do have some interesting transfers in, but nobody really that jumps off the page at you. I want to see South Carolina attack. I really do. I want to see South Carolina attack through the air. I want to see Lenora Sellers turned loose. Here's my thought, and I don't ordinarily feel this way, great one, about a guy who is getting his first real look at being QB1 like Lenora Sellers is. Turn this man loose. I let this man cook. everything that you trust Lenora Sellers to be able to do, let him do it. If you trust him to be able to roll out and create plays with his legs outside the pocket, then use the momentum of the offensive line, roll him out, and allow him to create plays outside of the pocket. If you trust Lenora Sellers with naked boots, run the hell up out of some naked boots. If you trust Lenora Sellers to run some draws, understand the spots where he can attack and understand the spots where he needs to go down, run some quarterback draws. I want every single element of Lenora Sellers' games involved here. I want to see Lenora Sellers acting like a wild child in this game. There, whatever you believe he can do, whatever you think that he can do, let him do it. Let him cook. Let him cook. Because I think that this is a game, for me, this is a game where, and I'm going to use Lonzo's expression, you're damn right I want to see some garbage time. I want to see some garbage time in this game. But I also want to see execution. I don't need you to do what a... I don't want to see you do what Colorado did last night. Colorado win the game? Sure did. Sure did. Colorado come close to covering? Sure did. If that weird off the ankle pick doesn't happen, maybe Colorado covers, right? Colorado's got a couple of spots here and there that they kind of fell apart. But that's because the game plan for Colorado was go out there and out athlete NDSU. Go out there and just be bigger, faster, stronger than NDSU and physical level around the football field. To me, North Dakota State played a more disciplined football game last night. They were a more disciplined team. They just didn't have the hosses to keep up with Colorado, right? Because they were just out-athleting them. And fine, that was the strength you had to utilize it. I don't want to just see South Carolina go out there and turn loose Nick Harbor and Lenora Sellers. I don't want to see them go out there and just turn loose their wide receivers and go, we're just going to out-athlete you. I want to see execution. I want to see a game plan. I want to see discipline. I want to see fundamentals. I want to see the offensive line opening up holes. I want to see the wide receivers snapping off their routes. If it's a five and in, run a damn five and in. All right? I want to see this team have core fundamentals and execution to show me that they're not going to panic like they did, I think, in certain spots last year. And if they do that and they cover up that 21, suddenly that Kentucky game next week looks a lot more interesting. If this team wins by 14 and they rely on just being better athletes to get to that 14, I get real nervous about next week. We'll talk more about it as we move forward with the show. We'll talk Clemson and Georgia when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. I would be lying to tell you I don't love the fact that there is a quarterback throwing tutties this year that goes by the name of General Booty, which means, do you have that clip still pulled up right there, great one? Oh, man, that's too bad. Because I got to tell you, if I'm a play-by-play guy and I draw a game where I get to call the game of one starting quarterback, General Booty, you better believe Rob Brown's going bananas with the call. Ladies and gentlemen, all right, here we go. Welcome in. The University of Louisiana Monroe Warhawks getting set this evening to take on Jackson State. Snap number one upcoming. Booty back in the pocket. Oh, that's great Booty. Booty in reverse. Booty backing up. A lot of pressure on the Booty. I mean, just boot, not the Booty, just Booty. Oh, dude, that'd be incredible.
You got me on one of those. I just want you to know.
How could I not? How could you not love the fact that you just get a season full of booty jokes? It's going to be spectacular. He's a big booty, too. You know, he's not a small booty. He's a big booty.
I'm guessing that probably the powers that be probably told the guys, hey, okay,
you can have like one.
You can have a little booty here, a little booty there, but you can't have too much booty.
Listen, keep the booty off the TV, all right? Like, we understand whatever you want to say about booty at home, that's your business. All right. Whatever your booty preference at the house is, I'm good with that. But do not bring your booty into this television studio
when
set.
A touchdown is scored, do not say that was bootylicious. Do not say that.
Come on, buddy, do bootylicious for you. I don't think you're ready for general booty. All right, let's get some stuff in here. Georgia, Clemson. By the way, if you are intrigued, Lonzo, the line on the game has moved another point. Now it's down to Clemson plus 12.5. So it does look like the loss of another running back for the Georgia Bulldogs has been factored in by the Vegas books. My bet is because there's a lot of folks, a lot of sharps out there that looked at the line sans the two running backs and decided to throw some scratch at the Clemson Tigers. Moved him from 13.5 down to plus 12.5. The over-under in this game set at 48.5. Clemson plus 375 on the money line. Almost a 4-2-1 number if you are pulling for the Clemson outright upset over the number one preseason team in the country, the Georgia Bulldogs. So, we've talked a little bit about this game so far. I have already told you what I am looking for. Blitz, 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 blitz on every play. And that wouldn't be out of character. Last year, the Clemson Tigers blitzed on almost one half of opponent dropbacks last year. Almost one half of opponent dropbacks, Clemson brought extra pressure. Wes Goodwin ain't playing. He wants quarterbacks hurried and hassled. And I want to see that tomorrow. I want to see you get to Mr. Beck. I want to see purple in the backfield all day long. Georgia enters this game as a favorite to win, now by less than a couple of scores, but also as a favorite to win the national championships this year. Carson Beck, perhaps the top quarterback in the country. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not super sold, all right? I'm not super sold. I think that Carson Beck's a good quarterback. I look at Carson Beck similar to the way that I look at Brock Purdy in San Francisco. Is he good enough to win you a natty? Yeah. Yeah, he is. But I think he's the type of guy that gets dragged to a natty by great talent, not drags good talent to a natty. I don't think people are entirely aware of how massively important Brock Bowers was to this offense last year. And I'm not just talking about the numbers that he put on the books. I am also talking about the distractions that he took away from them. I am also talking about the fact that when Brock Bowers ran across the middle of the field, you had to dedicate attention to him. And that opens up windows to the left and to the right. And I think Georgia took advantage of those. They don't have Brock Bowers this year. They bring back Oscar Delp. And Oscar Delp at tight end is a guy that had quite a bit of experience last year because Georgia was no stranger to two tight end sets. Oscar Delp was a guy that was called upon when Brock Purdy was just grabbing too much attention. He is a route runner. He is a guy that can make some plays, but he ain't Brock Bowers. He ain't Brock Bowers. You don't have that big threat. So I am absolutely saying you better bring everybody you got at this team. I need you to throw everybody at Carson Beck. I need you to make his life hell. I need you to decrease the average amount of time that Beck has in the pocket unpressured by like a second. All right. I don't need Carson Beck getting 3.75, 4.25 seconds back there to throw the ball. I need him having no more than 3 seconds to throw the ball. So what is it that Georgia can do right? Brock Bowers is gone. Ladd McConkey is gone. You already know, as we have pointed out, the fact that the running back field is going to be decimated for this game. Trevor Etienne and Roderick Robinson are both out for this contest unless something happens between here and tomorrow and Kirby goes, eh, who cares what anybody but us has to say? ETN's playing because we need him. But right now, my understanding is that he is not. Meaning Georgia is not going to have the run game that they wish to have for this contest tomorrow. To me, that's obviously a Clemson advantage if they take advantage of it by throwing extra men in the box, by attacking, by bringing extra defenders every time Beck takes a step back into the pocket. That's the way that I want to play this thing. But what else can the Dogs do against Clemson? Well, on the offensive side of the football, Dominic Lovett, Dylan Bell, Oscar Delp. Those are three names that I want you paying attention to if you're a Clemson fan, because those are three names that are going to have a lot of something to say about what this game shapes up to be, a lot of something to say about what that season is going to shape up to be for the Georgia Bulldogs this year. Keep an eye on those players. On the defensive side of the ball, Georgia is talented enough to win slugfest. I do not think that they are as talented as they were last year. Across the defensive side of the football, they do bring back their starting nose tackle, Nazir Stackhouse. But both of their, excuse me, and their edge rusher, Mikael Williams. But both players on the other side of the ball are not returners. You got a couple of new guys. In the backfield, you bring back Daylon Everett. He is the only starter returning from the defensive backfield from last year's Georgia Bulldog team. What does that say for me? Clemson's got to be able to establish the run. You've got to be able to lean on Phil Maffa. I have been saying all offseason that, yes, I agree with the thought that as Cade goes, go the Tigers. But I also think as Cade goes, goes the run game, or actually flip that around the other way. As the run game goes, goes Cade Klubnik. Even if Maffa is struggling in the run game, you cannot abandon it unless you find yourself in a hole. But early in this game, while this game is close, I need you running, 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 running the football, because I need to force Georgia to commit. I need to take advantage of youth amongst the defensive backfield. And the way you do that is by preventing Georgia from dropping extra men back to help. The way you prevent Georgia from dropping extra men back to help is by threatening them at the line of scrimmage, by throwing the ball at them between the tackles, making sure linebackers have to stay home, and then opening up the field behind them for Cade Klubnik. You do that and you expose the youth in the defensive backfield, then maybe Cade Klubnik has a chance to get into a rhythm. That's the best way for this team to win this game.
Okay, you keep talking about Georgia and the question marks there. What has Clemson done to improve? Why should a Clemson fan think that they got a shot at winning this game?
I'll give you a couple reasons I put together. I'm glad you asked. Great one. Glad you asked. Couple of things that I am looking at as Clemson tries to finish, start with the momentum they finished with last year, including five consecutive wins with an upset win of Notre Dame and a Gator Bowl win over Kentucky. Number one, I want you to go back to the 2022 ACC Championship when Cade Klubnik stepped in for DJ Uiagalelei. Do you remember that game? 20 of 24 for 279 and a tutty in that win over North Carolina. That's where the hype for Cade Klubnik started, because that guy came in relatively cold for DJ and had a lights-out football game. Clemson ran the ball in that. Clemson ran the ball. That's it for me. Clemson ran the ball, and it opened up the football field for Cade Klubnik. Number two, you're going to have to, and this is really the one that I think is the most apprehensive for me. You're going to have these young wide receivers make plays. You're going to have to trust them, right? Like, I know you'd like to bring them along and allow Tyler Brown and Antonio Williams. I know you'd like to give Bryant Wesco Jr. some time to kind of find the groove, to kind of find the rhythm, find the rhyme, give it up. It's Clemson time. But you got to trust them out of the gate. You are going to have to put trust in the wide receivers after the run game gets going. On the defensive side, Barrett Carter, Peter Woods. That's it. You can't let Carson Beck get comfortable. I will say, great one. You're going to have questions about Clemson. They're more than fair. Way more than fair. Where I don't have questions is Barrett Carter. Where I don't have questions is Peter Woods. Where I don't have questions is going to be Clemson's front seven and their ability to disrupt teams this year. Now, to ask the question, are they capable of disrupting Georgia, a team that is built on the philosophy of Nick Saban, that is, win in the trenches. Can they win in the trenches? I'd like to think the answer is yes. If the answer is yes, and they can even cause a stalemate in the trenches, that's how you win the game. It is get to Carson Beck. It is create a stalemate at the least in the trenches. It is do not let Carson Beck get comfortable dropping in and standing tall in the pocket. Make him run. Make him move. I don't think he's going to be super efficient on the run and on the move. Make him run. Make him move. Never let him get comfortable. When he's going to throw, make him throw on the run as often as possible. The front seven have to be good for Clemson. Those are the spots. Run the god dang football. Trust your young wide receivers. Do not try to bring them along. Do not try to grow them in this game. I need you, whether you are calling the plays. Oh, and that's the other thing is, and I'm going to say this with all due respect in the world. There was that story going around last year, great one, that towards the end of the year, towards the beginning of the year, when Clemson was getting into big game spots, that Dabo Swinney started to take over the Garrett Riley offense. He started to call the plays, and he started to go, we're not running the Garrett. He said this to me and Mark Ryan last year, preseason. He said, we are not running the Garrett Riley offense. We're running the Clemson offense, and Garrett Riley is running it. I'm going to tell you right now. Run the Garrett Riley offense. Let the dirt raid be the go-to. I want you running the ball, and when you throw it, I want you throwing it like every wide receiver out there is an All-American and number one draft picks. Treat the young guys like you trust them with your lives, but make Phil Moff of the bell cow and kill them at the point of attack on defense. That's how Clemson wins this game.
Again, all the hype around Garrett Riley, we got him, you didn't, all that kind of stuff. Make the offense better, because I haven't seen it.
Again, I'll tell you straight up, I absolutely believe. I think Dabo says a lot, and I think there's a lot that he kind of dresses up with the oh shucks y'all mentality. And that's fine. That's Dabo's personality. It works for Clemson. It's great. I believed Dabo last year when he said, we are not running the Garrett Riley offense. Garrett Riley is running the Clemson offense. I believe him. And I believe when Garrett Riley started to stray away from the Clemson offense last year, that Dabo reined him in by taking over. I've got to trust that Dabo was going to say, Garrett, you're the guy. I don't think Garrett Riley is a failed hire or not the guy everybody thought he was going to be. I just think he got told not to be that guy last year, and I'd like to think, lesson learned, they're going to let him drive this year. And if he drives this year, I think in game one, you will see an offense that looks different this year behind Cade Klubnik.
Or if you recall, when we were talking about this last year, we also speculated that there's a possibility that Dabo was covering for the Garrett Riley offense not working.
I'm taking
the blame.
I don't believe that because I watched the year before that, and it was the same offense. It was the same offense they ran with DJU, they ran with Cade Klubnik. I don't believe that, and I think you'll see that tomorrow. I think you will see an updated Clemson offense that looks different from last year because I think Garrett Riley gets unchained. I don't think Dabo was covering for Garrett. I think he pushed Garrett off the controls, and I think he'll fix that this year, or at least I hope he does. You know what don't need fixing? Lonzo reading a sports flash?
Yeah, it does. It needs like duct tape and chicken wire and all kinds of stuff. The Atlanta Braves squandered a 4-0 lead in the sixth inning to drop the first of a four-game set on the road at Philadelphia with a 5-4 loss to the Phillies. Atlanta collected 7 hits, including a pair of Matt Olson home runs, but struck out 13 times in the loss. Philadelphia's divisional lead grows to 6 games, while Atlanta's lead over New York for the final wildcard spot stays at 3 games. The North Carolina Tar Heels watched quietly as starting quarterback Max Johnson was carted off the field during a 19-17 win over Minnesota last night. Johnson took a sack in the third quarter and landed awkwardly on his right knee, immediately clutching it in pain. UNC has not provided any update on Johnson's injury. Tune in tomorrow at 5:30 p.m. as the Furman Paladins, which you can hear exclusively right here on The Fan, get their college football season started as they take on the Ole Miss Rebels. It's Furman versus Ole Miss right here on your home for Paladins football, The Fan, Upstate.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.